Welcome to Bell Folks Stuff, an experimental podcast where I talk to interesting folks about really important stuff that they enjoy doing. Let's get started. Hey, folks. We're going to do a little bit different tonight than I'd originally expected when I contacted the person that is playing victim number two for the Bell Folks podcast. Tonight, we have Rowan Blaze of the I Have Touched the Sky blog and also on the Beyond the Veil podcast. And his story isn't really complete unless you factor in his wife and constant companion, Scooter. So tonight we have both of them. And when I sat down to think of that, you know, Rowan actually suggested this, and it sounded like a great idea. So, hey guys, how are y'all doing?
We're doing well. How are you?
Hi.
Doing good. So, like I said last week, I don't really have a set of questions, but mostly I'm just trying to find out about you guys as gamers and, you know, so from like a 500-foot view, Rowan, Scooter, tell me about you guys' personalities. I mean, how would you describe yourself to somebody else?
Excuse me. I guess I am the more outgoing of the pair of us, but even then, I consider myself an introvert. It's more like a performance. When I do the podcast or I write on the blog, it's not that it's, wow, yeah, this was, I knew you were going to ask me this question. It became harder to actually answer it. I was kind of hoping Scooter would answer my personality question for me.
One word, goofy.
So,
well, it's true. He is goofy.
Yeah, I am pretty goofy. But so I guess what I'm saying is that I expend a certain amount of energy to be with people and put on the podcast and stuff like that. But I definitely need to re-energize, and I certainly have no problem being all by myself.
Yeah, I feel we're definitely a lot alike in that category because, you know, it's almost as if you're putting on the public face, you know, that, you know, a mask of sorts for interacting with other people. And then, you know, when you're done with that interaction, it's time to go be quiet for a while and, you know, piddle around. And, you know, I like the term faff about because, you know, that's kind of what you end up doing.
Exactly. In my professional life, I'm an instructor. And so I spent a lot of time on the podium, so to speak, talking to people and getting them to interact in the class. And at the end of the day, whenever I'm instructing, at the end of the day, I'm done. I don't really want to do anything else.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like I use MMOs very much as an escape. It is my way to reorder my mind after having to deal with all these people during the day. You know, and I do things to bad guys in MMOs that, you know, I might want to do to the problem children that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly.
So one of the most interesting things about your blog, and I'm not sure who said this the other day, but like in my blog, Tales of the Agronaut, there's a lot of I's. I did this, I did that, I accomplished this. But when you read your blog, it's almost entirely we. And I've always thought that aspect was really cool, that the two of you really do adventure together almost exclusively. So can you talk a little bit about that and what that experience is like for the people that, you know, don't have a constant partner that they're running around in games with?
Well, It's a shared hobby. I mean, you know, some people garden together and other people, you know, go antiquing or garage sailing or whatever. And that's something that they do with their spouse. We get in MMOs and kill bad guys. When I started blogging and when I started gaming, I was doing it almost exclusively by myself. And it's enjoyable, and I still do a lot of soloing here and there, but it's definitely more enjoyable to do it with a partner, with a regular partner, and even more so when we're spouses. It's just something we enjoy doing together.
And I've always thought that was really cool. Yeah, because you guys tend to roll very complementary characters to make the process a little bit easier.
Yeah, we've definitely fallen into a routine. I'm much like you, a bit of a protector in terms of I tend to roll the tank. But originally, I was a healer in World of Warcraft, and I really love that aspect and that kind of character. And so most of the classes that I've tried to play are some mix of the two, enough durability to take the punches, but also with the side of healing and stuff like that, and the ability to draw ag. Scooter tends to be more DPS oriented. You know, she likes the pew pew and the stabity stab.
And I bring the pain.
Right. So that actually, in some ways, makes it even more of a challenge to keep aggro off of her. But yeah, healing helps. Healing pretty much draws ag on everything around. So if she's hitting something specific, then she might be able to draw it off of me. But at least everything else is still on me.
Well, and I feel the protective nature definitely kicks in when you're you know, protecting people that you care about in these games. Like, I can tank for random strangers, but I am nowhere near as good a tank as when I'm tanking for people that I actually care about as friends. And that's always been an interesting paradigm to me, that, you know, it's almost like an instinct that's ingrained.
Exactly. That's how I felt about healing in, again, World of Warcraft and other games. I lean towards the priests and medics and that sort of thing. But that precludes the ability to draw a whole lot of, to be a tank, except in certain games like Rift and I'm assuming probably The Elder Scrolls Online and certainly Archeage. Where you can mix and match abilities so that it leans more towards some hybrid.
Yeah, a lot of times you can create a paladin-y type class that can do a little bit of each. And those are always fun.
Yeah, in fact, the first character I rolled in Archeage, by the time I got done, it started out, what was it, Anima or Vitality? Vitalism, that's what it was called, which was the healing class. And then rolled the melee fighter, whichever class that's called, or the second skill set. And by the time I got done with the two of those, the only one that made sense after that was the defender. And that trio of skill sets in Archeage is called the Paladin.
Yeah, and that's actually what my character in Archeage is. Not that I'm playing Archeage a lot.
We're not either.
So one of the questions that I have in the back of my head is, how did you guys get your start in gaming? Like, what are your earliest experiences gaming? Not exclusively together, but, like, you know, how did each of you get your start? And then what was the first thing you guys really played together?
Well, I started as a teenager playing D&D, and I really enjoyed that. And then just as my kids grew up, I would play games with them on their PlayStations and Segas and stuff like that. But pretty much my gaming kind of was put on the back burner because I was a single mom. But then I met Rowan, and I really got back into it, and I'm so glad that I did, because I really, really enjoy MMOs.
And that's really cool, because, like, I think D&D is a start for a lot of people. You know, we're all kind of in the same age group, I believe. And at least for me, that was some of my earliest experiences were D&D. And the weird thing about it was, you know, as we entered MMO gaming, you know, people acted like, you know, women gamers were just a weird concept. But for me, like, even back in the D&D days, at least half of the people sitting around the table were females. So it was just natural.
Yep, the same for me. A lot of my friends played games. We had huge groups that would get together, girls and boys.
Yeah, it was like a weekend thing. And, man, we would be there from, like, I don't know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night until, like, 3 in the morning playing D&D and then later like World of Darkness and I don't know, we played a lot of different systems.
Yeah, I ironically almost exactly the opposite, other than playing like what was it, the Atari 2600 that had the combat cartridge. Didn't play a whole lot of video games as a kid, other than at friends' houses. And my brother had some D&D books and organized like maybe one campaign or something like that, but I never really got into it. And then as I got older, none of the friends that I had seemed interested in it that I was aware of. And so it was just something I never really got into. And then in terms of video games, you know, I played stuff in the 90s, computer games almost exclusively. We didn't have a console like when I was at college and a young father. And so, you know, when I did play, it was things like SimCity or Age of Empires and that sort of thing.
I was kind of a junkie on the original SimCity, definitely. I remember that stupid card that you had to keep beside your machine so that it would ask you questions periodically.
Yeah, I played SimCity 2000 was the first one I got into, and they'd done away with the card at that point.
Yeah, like originally it was a red sheet of paper with black print on it, so you couldn't copy it, and that was the copy protection.
That's awesome.
So what was the first MMO you guys played together?
World of Warcraft.
I think that's going to be an answer from just about everybody.
Well, I think like everyone played World of Warcraft, but a lot, I mean, some people got started earlier. Like my first MMO was EverQuest. I played that fairly seriously for several years, but, so what server did you guys play on? What faction and, what classes?
We played a little bit of both factions, but predominantly Alliance. What server were we on? Uldum.
Okay.
I was in the guild Mutiny of Uldum. And,
well, there were a lot of servers.
Yeah, and then, we did play, had a couple of, real life, coworkers, friends that we got together and did a bunch of dungeon runs right when Scooter started playing, and that was on Eldritch Alas, I believe. But I hardly had any interaction with the larger community on that server. It was more Uldum.
Cool. I know the first game that we played together, the three of us, was Secret World. Or at least that was the first time I'd actually played with you in person, other than just interactions on Twitter or Google+. And you're still playing that regularly, are you not?
I am. I play Secret World. I've kind of like petered out on it a little bit over the past few months. I'm still, you know, logging in regularly and you know, doing this and that. And I'm subscribed, I get on every week and do a webcast with the Beyond the Veil people at Holosuite Media.
And it's a cool podcast. I've listened to it a couple times. I have to admit, I don't listen to it every week, but I listen to it whenever I think about it. It's really interesting to be on the server when it's going on, like, because you guys livecast that,
that's
right?
That's correct. We set up either in Agartha or like this last, just a couple of days ago when we did it on Thursday, we did it in front of the Raven's Knock, which is where Madame Roget is set up in Kingsmouth Town for Halloween. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we broadcast from various places. Surprisingly, I guess it's not really that surprising, but we've gotten more and more interaction from our regular viewers. And then Xander, the producer and former host, now his wife handles, Antita, she handles the hosting duties, but he was saying that they regularly get, you know, 10,000 or more downloads per episode from, like, iTunes.
See, that's just really awesome to me, because that's such a community-centered, you know, encounter. Because I've been on, and there's, like, a huge crowd around you guys when you're podcasting.
Yeah, everybody's dancing. Half the people are just wondering what the crowd is about.
So one of the coolest things that I thought was that you've been pretty big into the role-playing community in Secret World, right?
Not as big as I'd like. It's one of those things, going back to the tabletop role-playing, because I never got involved in it, it's something that I always kind of dream about, being able to sit around a table with people and talk about, you know, roll the dice and then talk about, you know, what happens and what goes on during the battle or, you know, during the dungeon crawl. And I never really got an opportunity to do that. I have a background in theater and show choirs. And, you know, so I like the idea of literally playing a role. But I, like I said, I never got into it. And then, so in the Secret World, I have one of my characters has a Twitter feed, and, you know, I get on there and talk to people a little bit. But it's really strange. As much as I like the idea of it, I never really role play when I'm actually playing a game.
Yeah, that's where I was headed with this, was that I thought it was so interesting that a bunch of you guys have Twitter accounts for your in-game character. That's just a cool idea.
It is, and of course the game, since it's set in the modern day, as opposed to, and quote-unquote the real world, as opposed to some mythical land like, you know, Talaria or whatever, it lends itself to that sort of offline, online interaction, you know, through the internet. And it is really cool. What's also really cool is that the devs themselves have picked up on it, and there are several NPC accounts that they run, and when they have certain events and things that go on exclusively on Twitter.
Yeah, I think I still follow the Richard Sonak or whatever account, and I don't know if that's an official or if that's just a player.
Well, it depends on which, if it's the one I'm thinking of, then yeah, it's an actual official account. Along with, there's one for the Kirsten Geary, the Illuminati leader, and you know, just various interesting characters. And I know for a fact that they trade off a bit, but when they're playing regularly, I won't say playing regularly, when they're tweeting regularly, often, you know, it's the head writer and the lead designer, and every once in a while, the actual, you know, game runner, running that are behind those tweets. And it's actually really cool.
Well, that's one of the things that really drew me into the Secret World, was the ARG aspect, the alternate reality game, that kicked it off, and then they've continued to do that, at least to some extent, with like the Buzzing account and other Twitter accounts that are, you know, set in the game world. It's always surprised me that they've never tried to integrate with Twitter directly and have some sort of official feed so that you can, I mean, you could check Twitter by opening the browser and going to the Twitter website that way. But it's always felt as though there should be some Twitter integration in-game, so it feels more like your character is in that world.
That would actually be really cool. Some of the excuse, I guess you could say, behind the a lot of ideas like that is that we're running around with phones. Most of your interaction with when turning in missions and stuff mimics the use of a phone, and you're talking, you know, the characters have the, you know, holding up the phone to their ear and stuff animation. So it stands to reason that you might have a connection to Twitter and the rest of the internet when you're playing the game, because your character has a smartphone.
Right. And I think the big hurdle has been, like Rift, when it first came out, it had integration with Twitter. And one of the things I noticed going back recently is my Twitter feed is no longer coming across inside of the game. So I think Twitter has actually been putting the kibosh on a lot of third-party clients, and that would probably be one issue they would have going in.
That's true. And, you know, it's one of those weird things that, you know, if it was more integrated, then you know, it would run into problems with the API. And I, like you said, I know that on occasion Twitter has locked down the API.
Right. So you guys are mostly playing Rift right now, correct?
That's correct. Actually, we're in Rift right now.
Awesome. What do you guys think of the new expansion?
Well, we haven't gotten to play most of it, but we did get into a Nightmare Rift last night, and it was pretty intriguing. I really liked it.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten to run a Nightmare Rift. I haven't seen one up. What's the experience like?
Well, it's strange because a lot of the regular rifts that have been in game since launch seem to be short. You know, it's just a few stages, and the Nightmare Rift it seems to be more along the lines of the original idea behind the rifts, that the more successful you are, the longer they last. And so this one was over 20 stages.
Oh, wow. That's significant.
Yeah, we didn't even make it to the end. We petered out, not us as individual players, but the group. Something happened, and we ran out of time, and then that stage was the rift that sealed, or the stage that sealed the rift.
Ah.
So I feel like probably it would have kept going if we'd been, you know, been beating the buzzer every time.
So what kind of rewards came from that?
I don't know.
Just your standard, you know, planar fare.
Every 10 levels, you got like a chest, and then when you opened that chest, it was all kinds of different stuff. I can't remember everything now, though.
Okay.
Yeah, they had inside each chest there was like you know, probably like an artifact or two and some notoriety of some kind, or I honestly can't remember.
So significantly better rewards than your standard rift.
That's correct. It was the rewards were very much enhanced.
That's cool. I need to get in on one of those because I know you have to purchase the lures, and I don't know if they spawn naturally in the world or not. But
yeah, I'm not sure. There didn't seem to be too many other players at the rift when it first opened. There may have been one or two, and that obviously is probably somebody opened it on purpose. We were in Stonefield. And so, which is a relatively low zone. It's the zone that's basically 20 to 30. And it was the rift itself was 25, level 25.
Hopefully I'll get to see some more of those. I'm not spending as much time in Rift as I would kind of like, because I'm kind of addicted presently to Final Fantasy. But since they released a big 2.4 patch.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. We originally, it didn't seem like that would be the kind of game that I would like to play. But watching your reports and stuff like that, I was I'm tempted. Not quite tempted enough to purchase it yet, but I'm getting close.
Well, they do have 14-day trials, so
you know, and we may do that if we you know, get tired of Rift.
There's a lot of content in Nightmare Tide, though. Like, I was just surprised at how much stuff they put in this time for only being three new zones.
Well, and we're really enjoying. We got our original run. We took our characters who were guardians at the time, and I think that's actually where you and I first interacted. We were in the same guild on Esper.
Yeah. Actually, you're correct. Because we had met through someone else.
Yeah, we weren't quite on at the same time, but yeah, that's how I started following you on Twitter and stuff.
You are correct.
We did have more direct interaction in TSW.
Yeah, I had honestly forgotten about that because I was in that guild so little. That was kind of an alternate guild for me. We were mostly playing on the Defiant side, and I was just looking for a place to dump a Guardian and. The person that we knew in common said, "Oh, you should totally hang out over here." And then I think I actually met Scooter before I met you, because I think she was on first. And like, I think we were talking one night when I was running around doing the low level Guardian quests.
Ah, okay. Yeah, we took those two Guardians to max level, about level 50, and almost immediately, like, just completely petered out. I mean, within a few days, didn't log in again until last summer when you were encouraging people to join up and check stuff out again.
Well, and we had a really good run there for a while. It was really fun. And I don't know exactly, like, I never know what events lead to people just slowly disappearing.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. You know, it was interesting what we were doing. We did a little bit of Ember Isle stuff on those high-level characters and considered, you know, we worked a little bit at some of our lower-level characters as well, but it just, for whatever reason, didn't really catch us. Just recently, as we've been, you know, casting about for things to play, we're like, well, why don't we try Rift again? And it's actually been real fun. We're playing the Defiant side. It's been long enough since we seriously played the game at all, and particularly the Defiant side, that while we vaguely remember some of the stories, it's kind of like reading a book that you haven't read in years. You're familiar with the main plot points, but a lot of the details are different. And on top of which, a lot of the details literally are different. They've changed the game even at the lower levels. I'm not even sure they had done that much alteration of the quest lines when we started playing again last year. They may have, and we just didn't get far enough.
Well, and I feel like, I don't remember what patch it was, but they did this one patch that kind of smoothed the rough spots of the early game, to where there were a few places where there was a wide gulf between sets of quests that made it very difficult to level. And I know at one point they kind of evened all of that out, and they kind of reordered like West March and some of the zones. I feel like the early game in Rift is extremely strong.
But then what?
Well, so and what I mean by early game is like the level 1 to 50. I feel like it's a really strong experience. I struggled with Storm Legion, the 50 to 60 content. And listening to like, you know, other people that have written posts about it, like I know Wilhelm has written several posts talking about his struggle with Storm Legion. It just feels very grindy. And thankfully, the 60 to 65 doesn't feel quite like that. But there's still this... Basically, what happens in WoW is you hit Burning Legion, and Burning Legion is a slog until you can get to, you know, Northrend. And I feel like they have the same thing going on with Storm Legion, that there's this 10-level slog between the really fun level 1 to 50 and the equally fun 60 to 65.
Well, we'll just have to see when we get there. That may be... well, we haven't quite decided whether we're going to actually do the purchase of the expansion that just came out, the Nightmare Tide expansion.
Yeah.
But if we do, we're leaning towards the $50 one, which includes the free level 60. And I may hold off and decide, you know, whether to brave through it at least once and then, you know, pick a different character to level up. If I do, it would probably be the... that guardian character that we originally hit max level with.
Yeah, what hit me with, like, I had gotten my rogue and my warrior both to 60, and then I had started on my cleric, and I used the boost to get over Storm Legion on the cleric, just because I really didn't want to do that content again. And honestly, Storm Legion, what happened for me was I could get to 55 really easily. Like 50, like 50 to 55 was a really fun experience, but then you hit this point where it was just really painful to move forward. The mobs hit significantly harder; they had way more health. There was just a point where it drug.
But you're saying the newer stuff is even better?
Oh yeah, it's much better. Like, and even if it's taking you a while to get a level, because there's only 5 new levels and there's 3 new zones, and the zones are massive in size, but even if it's taking you a while to level, you're constantly getting planar experience dings. So it feels like you're moving forward, even if you're not necessarily moving forward level-wise. And that was the thing. Like, for me, in a game like this, I feel like I need to have constant momentum of some sort to keep me engaged. And if I reach a point where I feel like I'm not progressing, either through gear or levels or something, then I kind of lose interest.
Well, that makes sense. I'm kind of the same way. If there's not a sense of progress, I'm kind of like, what am I doing?
So,
which is ironic, since, you know, I in my head I place so much emphasis on story and you know, what, you know, quote-unquote, what's my character's motivation, even if I'm not sitting there, you know, in a tavern, you know, RPing with somebody. But, you know, in practice, you know, what am I doing? I'm going out and killing 10 whatevers until I, you know, somebody gives me some loot and XP.
And I feel like the really good games are the ones that can kind of disguise the fact that you're doing a FedEx quest or you're running around and collecting X number of items in a zone. And the really great written games are the ones that make you forget, at least temporarily, that you're doing the same quest you've always done.
Exactly.
I feel like there's definite moments in especially Secret World and Final Fantasy XIV and Star Wars The Old Republic where the storyline is compelling enough that you forget that you're doing a Kill 10 Rats quest.
Yeah, I found a real dichotomy in Star Wars The Old Republic. All the story quests were fairly well done. They were driven obviously by the dialogue and what was you know what was moving the plot forward, but then at the same time you were the region or planet quests were just the same old thing, and it really wasn't as well disguised in my opinion as some other places. Rift is a perfect example. Originally, you had to, you know, you had a lot of those kill 10 of this and that, and then return to somebody, and that obviously breaks the action in a lot of ways. But now with the carnage, and they brought carnage quests all the way down, you know, the first zone, you start killing something, and it's like, oh hey, I need to kill 10 more of these, and there's some dialogue at the end that's like, hey, congratulations, you've saved the place to some extent, and. But you keep moving. There's no sense of going back to retreating to some place so that some quest giver can give you a reward.
Right, and I've always liked that's the one thing that they did starting in Storm Legion that I thought was great was you had this feeling that you are going out into the world and finding things, not you are going to a town and they are sending you on errands. But the leveling just slowed down a lot during Storm Legion. So one of the things that I thought was interesting that you just said a few minutes ago was that you guys reached a point where you wanted to check out Rift again. And I know personally I find myself going back to lots of different games. Other than Rift, are there any MMOs that you guys check out fairly regularly that you've gone back to numerous times?
Not extensively, to be honest with you. We did a little bit of playing in World of Warcraft, the lobby zones, the trial stuff, earlier this summer, but not more than, you know, a couple of days, you know, a total of maybe, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, just, it was a lot of the same old, hasn't changed. Now, you know, obviously that was prior to Warlords, so I don't know if they've changed anything drastically since, but every time I've gone back there since I really stopped playing, it just feels real static and you know, one of those you can't go home again, partly because you don't remember what home was really like.
Well, and that's the problem that I've had with WoW, is that what I loved about WoW wasn't necessarily the game, it was the accumulation of people that happened to be playing the game at that time. You know, because I was a guild leader of a really large group, and a lot of those people have gone on to other things. So home is never quite the same once people start leaving it, at least as far as an MMO goes. So, yeah, the game is the same, and I had fun. Like, last year during NaNoWriMo, I got knocked out of Final Fantasy because I just couldn't play a game that was that engaging and be writing, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 words a night. So I started playing WoW again, and it was pretty much mostly because it was a game I could play on autopilot. And I ended up back there for, I don't know, a few months, and it was enjoyable, but it, especially the time I spent playing the Warlords Alpha, not long ago. It just definitely feels like a 10-year-old game at this point.
Yeah, which is, yeah, I, Scooter's wondering if Warlords is going to change that. I don't think it will, to be honest with you, because it hasn't changed in the last couple of expansions.
Warlords very much felt like hanging a fresh set of wallpaper in a dilapidated house. I mean, that's, I mean, and I don't mean that to sound harsh or whatever, but it definitely feels like an old game, and the systems still feel dated. At least when you've gone out and played a lot of the newer generation MMOs, they've each improved upon some of the basic things that WoW does, and it's hard to go back without all those enhancements you're used to.
Right, and that's, you know, other games, just like Blizzard did with WoW, you know, they improved, they polished on what had been the MMO at the time, you know, EverQuest and Ultima, and even like Dark Age of Camelot and stuff like that. They made improvements, and it was an improvement. But since then, others have innovated in ways that Blizzard has not. That's one reason I'm kind of disappointed with the news about Titan, is because, you know, I was hoping that maybe the engine is just the Warcraft engine is just too old. They can't patch it anymore, or, you know, revise it in a way that is effective. But it looks like, you know, they're just gonna stick to the Golden Goose and go move on to other things instead of another MMO.
Well, I think at this point, World of Warcraft is kind of like the Weasley house in, you know, the Harry Potter novels, that, you know, stuff keeps getting tacked onto it, and
that's a great comparison.
And really, like, I'm a software developer by trade, and I hate fixing other people's code. And in WoW, I keep seeing them tacking new systems on top of the old systems instead of just modifying the way the base systems work. So instead of improving the size of your bank, for example, they added void storage, which is like a whole other kind of bank. Right. But the underlying problem is there's still an issue with the banks are too small. So I think they're not – I think that all the people that worked on the code initially are gone, and people are coming in and reading the old code, and they don't want to modify it. I mean, reading somebody else's code is always a stress. So instead, they're implementing new stuff on top of it, but just like the Weasley house – the original core is there, and even though you're adding bedrooms, hanging out, cantilevered over things, the original house is still a little wonky.
Right. That's a perfect example. And that, but the core game, like you said, is still, you know, that original combat system and what have you. And I've just been to too many different combat systems that are an improvement over Warcraft's to ever really enjoy going back.
Yeah, like, I like it for a period of time, and this last time I went back, I tried to do the whole raid thing, and realistically, I came to the realization that I cannot do serious raiding anymore. Like, it's not a thing I have a passion for. I'm fine with doing a casual raid group once a week, but, you know, actually trying to push our way through content is just not something I enjoy anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever go back to any kind of raid. They've been the people from Beyond the Veil. I shouldn't say people. My friends,
those guys,
those people. No, they like Galactrix, who is also on Twitter and stuff. You know, has been like, oh, we need to get you into nightmares and stuff like that in the secret world. And I'm kind of like, you know, I don't feel like I need it. You know, it would be cool. It'd be cool to have some of the achievements and stuff, but, you know, it's just not that important to me.
Nightmares, you know, straight killed our little group of people. You know, because we got up to nightmares pretty early on, and we ground the heck out of elites. Like, we were getting to the point where we could just run them in our sleep, and we started doing nightmares. And Nightmares, it felt like a totally different game to me, mostly because the choices that we wanted to play were suboptimal for Nightmare content, and right, none of us really wanted to give up on the thing we enjoyed to be able to be a success.
Yeah.
And I hated that was kind of a choice. Like, it felt like if you were playing Melee at all, you were a detriment to your group.
Unless you're the tank.
Yeah, unless you're the tank, right.
And I agree with you. I think that while I don't want to say that they're not balanced properly, but I think that the the dungeon design is oriented around a certain approach, and it's every dungeon. If it was like one dungeon, you can't have any melee, then that would be cool. You know, you could swap out and do a ranged instead. But it's every single dungeon are run essentially the same. And considering the fights themselves are pretty spectacular, they're interesting fights.
Yeah.
The fact that they, at the nightmare level, have that kind of limitation is frustrating.
Yeah, it very much feels like they're expecting players at that level to have unlocked basically everything and can swap to specific abilities when needed on certain encounters. Now, I will say, at least at the elite level, we really did enjoy the fact that we could change things up on the fly, and, if we needed a purge, you could swap in a purge for this one fight. Or if you needed, an interrupt for something, you could just swap that in for that one fight. But I think, for me at least, the strong point of Secret World has always been its story.
Yeah, and that's really, the nightmares and even some of the stuff that came afterwards was really oriented around, keeping people busy while they developed more story content. But the DLCs that came out, issue 6, which was the Last Train to Cairo, and then issue 7, which was what was that, Dream to Kill or something, kind of like spy oriented. They do such a great job with the theming and even the mechanics. I'm always amazed at the train. Even a year and a half later, going through the train sequence on the Last Train to Cairo is just amazing. The level of detail that they have.
And what makes it even more phenomenal is, if you think about it, that is an old engine. That is the Age of Conan engine that is doing Secret World. I mean, yeah, it's been improved here and there, but at its core, it's the same engine as Age of Conan.
Right.
So it's a really malleable system that they can do all this interesting stuff with it.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about what's going on under the hood. The game itself feels very different, in terms of both character progression and animation and stuff like that. Not to mention all the cutscenes and what have you. So, but if they're running the basic animation engine from Age of Conan, I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it really is.
Compare that to the Weasley House of WoW that, looks really dated at this stage.
Well, and I feel like some games. We don't want to bash WoW.
But a bash of WoW. I mean, I love WoW. That was the first. That was where I cut my teeth for 5 or 6 years before moving away from it. And I think they do a great job. And obviously, they've managed to get lots of people to love the game, and still love the game.
Well, I always find it interesting when game companies can creatively use limited resources. Like, for example, the Guild Wars 2 engine. It looks gorgeous, but if you really pay close attention, the sprites are low resolution, the textures are low resolution. It is not that detailed of an engine, but they are using the abilities in a certain way to make it look greater than the sum of its parts.
Exactly. And I remember you talking to Syl about, how painterly it looks. And that's really, that's kind of a trick because it's a good trick. I mean, paintings have never been about, hyper-realism. They've been about giving you, even the ones that are not impressionistic paintings, have been about giving you an impression of an image, not the actual image itself.
Right.
And so the fact that they tapped into that for Guild Wars 2 is just phenomenal. It's a gorgeous game.
So speaking of artistry, and this is a decent point to segue, I know the story because I've read your sidebar, but can you give our listeners like a quick rundown of where the name of your blog came from?
Okay, so when I first started the blogging, about games in what year was that? Early 2010. I actually started. It was a World of Warcraft blog. I was still raiding in Wrath of the Lich King at the time, and not long after that, I started playing Star Trek Online, and I started a second blog rather than you know keep just blog the same thing. And I was trying to come up with a more creative name for that second Star Trek Online blog versus the really prosaic name that I had for my original Warcraft blog. And as I was thinking about it, you know, one of the most poetic titles from any Star Trek show, episode titles, was from the original series, and it was called "For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky." And there's all sorts of meaning behind that if you start to stop and think about not just the beauty of the words themselves. I'm drawn to poetry and that kind of lyrical writing, I guess you could say, purple prose maybe. But the idea that you know behind the world that we occupy, you know, it's not everything that it appears to be. That you can actually you know reach the limit of it, and that's certainly the case with massively multiplayer online games. Any game really, you know, it's a more limited version of the world we live in. And so just the whole idea of it just appealed to me, and that's why the title is that one.
Well, and I've always thought that, you know, the quirky title definitely fits your blog, because your blog is, it's almost a slower pace and more artistic blog than a lot of our blogs are. And I've always appreciated that about it, that, you know, you tend to summarize a lot of the things that we're saying in ways that we didn't take time to say, even when, you know, you may not agree with what we're saying, you're still giving credence to whatever was said, but also adding your own opinion on top of it. And I've always appreciated that of it.
Well, thank you. I sometimes, you know, like the blog that I, the post that I wrote the other day about, you know, online bullying, somebody else in the comments actually made a point that I had intended to make and then forgot, which was kind of funny because I was like, I totally meant to talk about that, and I didn't.
Yeah. And another thing that, you know, I just have to mention while I've got you on here is you are like the best publicist ever for anyone other than yourself. You write amazing posts for other people and are constantly calling out other people in the community, and I have no idea what caused you to start, you know, posting tweets about my blog, but you have been the single best publicist I've ever had.
Well, you're welcome. I, you know, I'm not really sure either. I started reading, you know, obviously, you know, you were posting before you started posting every day. You would post occasionally. But for some reason, your stuff started coming across my feed every day, and I'd read it, and it was interesting, and it was personal, and it wasn't constantly critical of the medium, which is something that appeals to me. I mean, I'll read various, and have been critical myself, but you know, I'll read every once in a while somebody's cynical blog. But it's not something I want to read every day. It's kind of like, if you have that much of an issue with MMOs, why are you still involved?
Well, and my thing has always been that, you know, if all you have to say is bad stuff about something, then maybe you should not be doing that something. You know, growing up, I used to call it thumper logic, you know, from Bambi, where, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Exactly.
And we have so much negativity in not just the blogosphere, but, you know, games journalism and, you know, forum posts and Reddit, that I kind of wanted to be a mostly positive place in the world. And, you know, that's not to say I don't say negative things about stuff, but I always try and look at a positive side, too. So if I'm going to say a negative thing, I would really rather, you know, end up on a positive.
Right. I mean, it's like you said, there's plenty of negative in this world, and sometimes I think people they have legitimate criticisms, that is, maybe I should say not criticism but critique, things that could be improved, but we're not skilled at framing them in a positive manner, you know, and so it ends up feeling like a complaint, and the internet is very happy to wallow in that complaining, that whining.
Well, and I think maybe for me, it's because I've known so many of the people behind the games. I've got friends that work at various game companies, and that has to have a massive effect on their own self-confidence when every forum post they read talks about what a horrible person they are because, you know, they didn't give X player this one item that they wanted. And that's not cool. I mean, if my world revolved around that much negativity, I wouldn't enjoy doing my job.
Yeah, agreed. You know as well as I do, because of the kind of, you know, job that you're in with the programming and stuff, that, you know, when stuff doesn't work, you know, people have a problem with it, and it can be frustrating. And, you know, I don't want to come home and essentially and have more negativity, more frustrating.
So one of the questions that I asked Syl, and I kind of want to ask this of everyone going forward, what makes you afraid in the world? Like, what are you, either what are your fears, or what are your fears at a larger level?
You know, I'm not a very fearful person.
Okay.
I've had people, you know, it comes up in conversations, what are you afraid of, kind of things. And, like the secret world is a perfect example of, you know, people talking about, you know, this or that mission totally creeped them out, or, you know, don't play it in a dark room alone kind of thing. In fact, it's really funny. The just on the forums the other day, the secret world forums, I don't remember the details of the original conversation. Somebody was telling me the story, but one of the responses that came out of this forum thread was, when you solo, no one can hear you scream. And the game director, Joel Bylos, happened to see the thread for whatever reason. I don't know if he was reading them himself or was, you know, somebody directed into it. But he said, you know what? That is really cool. We're going to make a T-shirt. And for Halloween, they gifted every single player. All you have to do is put in the little code, and you get this T-shirt that says on the front of it, when you solo, no one can hear you scream. And it's hilarious. But TOSW doesn't scare me. I would have to say that you know, based on, like, when I have bad dreams or nightmares, losing my job, you know, not being able, I guess, to fulfill my financial obligations and you know, support my family. And that sounds really strange and prosaic, but, you know, I've been all over the world. I've been in some very real danger, but I've never been frightened in the sense of, other than, what will happen to my family.
Well, and I think that's going to be probably a very common thing, because once you reach a certain point in your life, what you think about in those terms shifts. You know, you realize that you are more than just a person. You are, you know, someone that has responsibilities and someone that has, you know, individuals that rely on you. And letting them down is always a constant fear.
Scooter didn't want to tell me.
Things that are out of my control.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, that's probably also really common too. Like, I used to have this nightmare, and it morphed as I went through my life. Like, when I was in school, for example, I would have a nightmare that there was a project that I had forgotten about, and it was due tomorrow, and I had to do, like, a month worth of work in one night. And then when I went to college, it morphed to there was a class that I was enrolled in that I forgot I enrolled in, and I had to do an entire semester's worth of work. And now that I'm in the working world, the funny thing is it's kind of hung up on the college. Like, I know I'm not in college, but I will have this dream where I am enrolled in a class and I have an entire year's worth of work to do, and it still freaks me out. Like, even though I know at a rational level that I am not enrolled in that college class.
That's funny.
Okay, so kind of the opposite end of that question, what gives you hope?
Society marches on. I grew up in a fairly conservative household.
Brady Bunch.
Did you hear that? Brady Bunch?
Yeah.
Not a Brady Bunch sets of a blended family, but very much that kind of like 60s. Almost, I would almost say more like Father Knows Best or something.
Yeah.
And even then, we weren't quite as conservative as some people I knew. But there was still that sense of, I guess absolutes. And while I haven't quite lost that sense of, there is an absolute truth out there, I've decided that either we've been looking in the wrong direction or have been concentrating on what we think is the absolute truth is not that at all. And hence it's made me more liberal than the people that I work with, for example.
Yeah, that's a weird situation to be in, because like I am a tiny purple dot in a sea of red. So,
right, I guess that would be what I'm not blue, but I'm definitely not red anymore.
Yeah.
So purple sounds good.
Purple's such a pretty color anyway.
Man. And so, like I said, that idea that we're slowly getting better. Obviously society, both Western society and the world as a whole, we have setbacks, there's problems, and a lot of that is what we do to each other. I think that the people that are correct, for lack of a better term, are slowly winning, but it's very slow. And so I have hope for the future.
Yeah, I mean, even in our own little community, I mean, I feel like things are always slowly inching towards the better. And that may just be that I have a Pollyanna attitude towards life, and, that's fine if that's true. But, I tend to expect the good in people. And, grand scheme of things, I'm really rarely let down when I put my faith in someone else out in the world.
Well, that's good to know. I don't think I can't remember the last time I was just out and out disappointed by something that somebody did.
Yeah.
At least not to me personally. And no form of progress is ever smooth. So we think everything's hunky dory, but there are certain groups or people, whatever, that things aren't hunky dory for them. And the rest of us are, have our head in the sand until we're forced to confront things, and that makes some people very unhappy. But in the end, it needs to be done.
Yeah, but I also feel like once we pull our heads out of the sand, the forward thinking path tends to happen. Like once enough people realize something's wrong, the socially positive, result is usually what we start moving towards, very slowly, but we kind of inch in that direction.
Exactly.
Well, we have run probably a little bit over at this point. Are there any closing thoughts you guys want to impart upon our listeners?
I don't think so. Stay classy, I guess. be excellent to each other and keep playing. I guess that's really, and I get into, I guess, arguments with people. As I get older, I've come to realize that, I don't have to be, I may be right, but I don't have to rub it in somebody's face. it's not worth getting angry over. Much in our lives is worth getting angry over. If in the gaming world, if you like a game, if you love a game, play it. If you don't, don't play it. There's no reason to be, to be negative online about it. Some people could make the argument, nothing will ever change if it's not pointed out, and there's certainly value in that. But that's not what individual games are about and game mechanics and stuff. That's a larger social problem.
Yeah.
Like I said, just be excellent to each other. I mean, if we thought really thought about, you know, what it would be like to have the shoe on the other foot, so to speak, I think that we'd be a lot nicer to each other.
I do too. Give me a rundown for our listeners of where we can find your stuff.
Okay, well, let me see here. Let's start with the blog. You can find me at all one word, I have touched the sky at blogspot.com, and on Twitter at Rowan Blaze. Scooter can be found at SCTRZ. And I'm also a regular panelist on the Beyond the Veil webcast, which can be found through holosuitemedia.com. And I guess that's about it.
Well, I really appreciate you being so willing to help with this. And Scooter, I appreciate you coming on and hanging out as well. I am always, I'm just enamored by the experience you guys have in these games together. So yeah. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Well, thank you very much. That's it for the show, and hopefully everybody will tune in the next time I record one of these and listen as well, and hopefully have an excellent evening. Good night, folks.
Good night.